Okay, everyone. Also, if anyone could just tell me that I'm definitely in the right group, because now that isn't coming up. Hold on. Oh, yeah, no, I am. Okay, here we go. So, Bodhi may or may not have broken her nose. So, Chloe is off checking that out. But we didn't want to move another live because we knew that it had to be moved from last week. So, I am here to answer any questions that anybody has and go through some of the tags. In fact, there was two things that did come up in the group that I wanted to go over. So let me just get my notes up. Do-do-do-do. This is way harder. Now I remember doing this when Chloe was pregnant. God, there's a lot going on my computer. This is a lot harder to do when there's no one to bounce off while you're finding things. Okay, right, I found it. Okay, so one of the things that came up was a comment. I'll keep it anonymous, partly because they posted it anonymously, so I can't even say who it is. But anyway, the thread kind of went on, but one comment I wanted to bring up was this, because I think it will resonate with a lot of people, and it's easier to kind of talk through this on the live as opposed to all written. So she says, "Hi, Emma. I struggle to stay under calories. I probably manage about 4 days a week, and that's a good week. I walk the dog every day. I jog 1 to 2 times a week, and I gym twice a week. I'm 157 centimeters tall, and I weigh 74 kilograms. So I do 1700 and sorry, 1790 calories a day. I tried low calorie things so many times I can never stick to it." Okay. So, in this example, what we need to consider is not just how many calories you're sticking to, or in this case, potentially not sticking to, but also other things that can impact hunger or why you might be going over your calories. So, just to touch on the calories, now, I don't know when you say you walk your dog every day, I don't actually know the exact steps that you're doing. So, if you're like, I walk my dog every day and I'm doing 20,000 steps, that might be something to consider. But if I'm assuming that you do sort of 10 to 12,000 steps a day, or even like 8 to 12,000 steps a day, and you weigh 74 kilograms, right? So on basic maths, like, yeah, the calories that you're on, which are roughly 1800, should put you in a modest deficit if you stick to it, right? And this is where I want to get to, because it's all well and good just being like, oh, you can't stick to your calories, then like let's increase them. Well, assuming that your goal is fat loss, if we increase your calories, you're going to be in a very small deficit, if a deficit at all, and you're not going to see much fat loss. So that begs the question, okay, so you're already on sensible calories. Why aren't you able to stick to them? And there might be numerous reasons for this, because it's not just the total calories that impact even satiety, right? And I'll come on to like all the other caveats to this. But if we just look at satiety, it's not just like, oh, I'm on 1800 calories and I'm hungry. Oh, then obviously you're not eating enough. Not necessarily, because what we need to consider is what you're eating within that. The primary focus on that in terms of satiety would be things like protein and food volume, because you can eat 1800 calories of ultra processed food that doesn't have much food volume, that isn't high in protein, and be very hungry. Or you can eat 1800 calories of mostly whole foods, high protein, high volume, and be very satiated. It's not just the calories, but it's how you make them up. Then I'd like to know when you're most likely to overeat. Is it a certain day? How is your sleep? Because that will impact hunger as well. Like, is there a certain time of day that you're hungry? What does your pattern of eating look like? Are you someone who overrestricts at the start of the day and then tends to overeat in the evening? And is that what's causing the overeating? When you say that you stick to it about 4 days a week, which 4 days are those? Does it tend to be like, yeah, Monday to Thursday is good, and then as soon as Friday hits, I end up overeating because I'm eating more socially, and then same throughout the weekend. So it would be good to consider all these things. And the reason I wanted to go through this is because loads of people will be in a very similar situation, and you can kind of troubleshoot these things, right? It'd be things like, what are the other reasons that I could be hungry? Lack of sleep. What are the other reasons that I could be eating that aren't hunger? Are you tired? Are you emotional? Are you boredom eating? Is it from over restriction at other times? And then within those calories, how are you making it up? Are you getting in enough protein? Are you getting in enough food volume? Yeah, because there's only so much we can do with it. Like, if we know that, hey, fat loss is your goal, we need to be having you in a deficit. So you can't just be like, oh, let's just increase your calories. That will solve the hunger problem. Right. But it's not going to help you reach your goal, is it? So we need to consider the other things too. Thank you, Samantha, for the love. Yes, I believe I've got this. Okay. Hi, Emma. I saw that on the news last week, the FDA announced that they have seen an unexpected side effect of Ozempic, and it's making more women taking it unexpectedly pregnant. Types, please. Oh, thoughts, please. It's making people unexpectedly pregnant. I mean, I would wonder, is that because they feel better, have lost weight, and they're having more sex? Or is that because there's some contra indication with like hormonal contraception? Or I don't know. I actually haven't seen that, so I'd need to go and have a look into it. Interesting, nonetheless. And then lots of love for Bodhi. I will fill you in when I hear from Chloe. Let me see if she's. No, still don't know. She's off to A&E to find out if the nose is actually broken or not. Okay, so this one is from Becky, and she says, I'm struggling. So, first of all, well done for reaching out, because usually people struggle to reach out when they're struggling, ironically, but is when the most coaching support can be put in place. Okay, so she says, as Emma knows, I own a business and I work full time as a shift worker. What does ODP mean again? I know it's something in the NHS. ODP. Something, something practitioner. Anyway, whenever things get busy like they are now, my workouts and my own health goals are first to go. I can plan them in as best I can, but I always prioritize my business over them, rightly or wrongly. I'm trying to manage my eating habits, and I'm such a stress eater, and I have things in place for me to try and minimize as best possible, which I'm semi-nailing. I'm getting up at 5, and I do 2 hours of work in the morning before I start at the hospital. I do 2 hours of work in the evening. I hate working out in the evening anyway, and I'm spending my days off completely focused on my business also. I do have 3 days off a week. One of these is straight after night shift, and I can never realistically train then. So I'm currently managing one workout a week at the moment. Steps are high because I do have to walk my dogs, and not and dogs non-negotiable on my days off. Obviously, I'm not losing fat. I'm just really struggling to stick to anything, and I know you both will have ways to navigate this. I'd really appreciate help with it. My happy place is in the gym. I used to be able to train 5 days a week, and I fucking loved it. But it just seems so unrealistic now, and that makes me sad. If I could magic an hour up a day to train, I'd be over the moon. But getting up at 4 is ridiculous, is it not? Yeah, I think so. This is where like a bit of balance comes in, right? So I think I agree. Getting up at 4 probably is ridiculous, and that's probably not going to be, as much as that's technically an easy solution, like just make another hour in the day. Like, you are probably going to find that you're very tired, grumpy, over hungry, potentially then overeat, under recover. And I don't think you can just keep getting up earlier and earlier and earlier because you've got a busy life. So I think 5 is, and I've tried this. but I think 5 is probably a good place. You're already getting up early. I guess my question would be, and I think this will help both in business and in terms of your health and your productivity and how you feel and your energy and your fat loss goals, is can you get up at the same time, but spend the first 20 minutes doing a little circuit, doing something? If you can still get to the gym once a week, if you're doing that, that's great. But even if you just think, right, even for my productivity, like get up, do something. Now, whether you do that first thing or whether you do it, at the end of your work block that you're doing for business, and you only do, and by the way, I'm Becky's business coach as well. So I have like bias on both sides, right? Like, I want her to do this work, but I still would rather you took half an hour out of that and spent it on yourself, on exercise, than doing the 2 hour work block. And part of the reason for that is that we all like to think that we can work really well for a whole 2 hours, but you probably can't, right? There's probably like at least 20 minutes in there where you're not doing that much or your productivity starts to drop a little bit. And I know that you're also on AFM and you're doing 30 for 30. So I want you to kind of synthesize what you're doing a little bit more. There's very distinct areas you should be focusing on in regards to business over the next 30 days. And I want you to kind of use that and use it for your health goals as well. The better you are, the better you show up for your business and the better your work output will be anyway. Now, there is a balance between it all, right? You can't then be like, oh, well, I'll just go to the gym for 2 hours instead. And then you'll get nothing done with work, right? It's like, okay, well, how much exercise do I need to do to kind of like stimulate my body, stimulate my mind, make sure that I show up at my best for work and for my own health? But there'll be a bit of a limiting law of diminishing returns in regards to that, right? So I had a very similar work spell last summer. And I ended up start like I mean these workouts got shorter and shorter, but they were started at 30 minutes. Now sometimes they were only like 15 minutes, but I'd still get like a full body circuit in. So you might have to slightly change the way that you're working out at the moment. And as much as you were like, yeah, do you know what? I used to love going into the gym for a whole hour, 5 days a week. That might not be realistic at the moment. But what is realistic is doing more than one session a week, especially if you're like, right, how do we make short, sharp workouts that I can do at home? If that means, I don't know, investing in a pull-up bar or an extra dumbbell or some resistance bands or something, it doesn't need to be the best workout in the world, but doing something consistently is better than nothing. And honestly, body weight workouts are so underrated. I think people think that they'll be easy, but they're freaking not, you know, like especially as a woman, mainly because our body weight in comparison to our strength is, for most women, quite a hard thing to move. For example, like most people who do, or most women who do push-ups are probably lifting, or at least a lot of the time, lifting more when they try and do a push-up than they are when they use dumbbells. Especially if you're Chloe and you try to get away with lifting 8 kilogram dumbbells in front of me. I was like, absolutely not. So you can, my point being, you can get a very good home workout done in 20 to 30 minutes. And I then think that your content that you put out will be better as well, because you'll be more focused, you'll feel better, your energy will be better. So there's the solution for you. Let me know how that goes. Operation department practitioner, yes. Yes. Okay, Samantha, they said it could be like antibiotics or people feeling better about themselves and need to do more research. Huh? Be like antibiotics in what sense? As in, yeah, I don't know. I definitely think there could be something for feeling better about yourself. Do you know what I've noticed? And this, again, not research, just observational data. The people I know who have either had gastric bands or have lost a lot of weight. Actually, no, actually, all these three people that I'm thinking about have all had weight loss surgery. They've all broken up with their partners. And I think that's quite interesting. And I remember watching a show about this, and it was, I guess, the reason that I think the couple on the show broke up was because the woman was like, well, my love language was always making these big meals that he used to love. And now we don't do that. And now we don't sit and have dinner anymore. And now he's doing all this other stuff. And now he's got like hobbies and it just doesn't work, and like the dynamic of a relationship can change. And yeah, like also three of my clients that's happened to, where they broke up with their partner, I guess because you change a lot as a person. Like when you lose a lot of weight, your behaviors change, what you do changes. You know, they don't go out binge drinking anymore, and a lot of them, especially with weight loss surgery, you physically cannot eat that much, which means that, you know, if a lot of your relationship with your partner was going out and eating big meals, or they still want to do that and you don't want to do that anymore, like that can cause like a bit of a rift. And then I think sometimes it is as well, like the increase in confidence, and maybe, and that this is probably a certain type of person as well, but like maybe the attention that that person is now getting that they weren't used to getting, and maybe they want to explore that attention. Anyway, I don't know. Samantha, when you take antibiotics, they stop oral contraceptives from working. Oh, I see. Never really been a, well, I say never, not recently been a big problem for me. Okay, Shona, help. I've had constant pack. Oh, I think this is meant to say back. Maybe back and foot pain for the last 9 months. I've just had an MRI, and as well as degenerative disc disease and a tear, I also have a bulging disc close to a nerve and in constant pain. I have exactly the same. It's really not fun. I just can't seem to see a way forward, and I'm desperate to be pain-free and exercise. How did you get better after your back issue? So, complete transparency, I'm not like totally fixed. I do definitely have flare-ups. It's a lot better than it was. Somewhat interestingly, I had an MRI about maybe this time, no, about August last year. And it looks almost exactly the same as before I had my surgery. But that bulge in the disc is at the moment, touch wood, let's all pray for me, not touching a nerve. And that was the difference, is that before it was just slightly like impinging on, I think, my sciatic nerve. And that's why I was just in constant pain. And it's the slightest change. So I kind of know that at some point, I mean, hopefully not, but that potentially might happen again. And they said either the surgery never worked because you don't actually get an MRI post-surgery, or it's like re-herniated or re-slipped or re-bulged, or some people are so spit like, oh, you can't have a slipped disc. That's not how it works. Whatever, right? The disc is touching the nerve, however you want to like frame it or say it. That's what was causing so much pain. I don't know, obviously, your situation. There was a long time where they wouldn't do surgery because it wasn't like bulging enough, which some people get annoyed at, but I totally get. Like a lot of the time, the scar tissue would actually be worse from surgery than the benefit of surgery. So it has to be like quite severe for them to be like, oh yeah, we could go in with surgery here and be confident that we're going to make it better, not potentially worse. So it's not, I think. Some people are like, oh, why wouldn't they give me surgery? It would just fix it. It's really not that simple, and you really want to avoid surgery. Unfortunately, I can't help you at all with this. I'm not an injury specialist. I literally just have my own experience, which was for me surgery. That was the only thing that worked. I spent, don't even want to think about how much, but I tried everything, like numerous physios, numerous osteopaths, even though I don't really believe in them, numerous like Chinese medicine. Even though, again, like, did a load of acupuncture. Is there any research? Don't know. Don't care. Thought it might work. Probably one of the most stupid things I did was buy a, what are they called? I don't know what they're called, but it was like a bed that you strap your legs into and then you turn the bed upside down and it's meant to like decompress your spine. And one day I got stuck in it, and which sounds funny in hindsight, but it was actually really quite sad. Like, I was quite sad about it afterwards. Mainly because I couldn't get out. Like, I was on my own. I couldn't get out. And I was like stuck upside down in this bed. And I was like, this is it. This is so sad. But yeah, that wasn't a great time. I was on a lot of drugs. Yeah. But actually, like, for most people, that doesn't happen. For a lot of people, taking things like high dose anti-inflammatories, obviously prescribed by your doctor in the right way for you, does mean that it eases off enough for you to keep moving and the flare up kind of like passes. But you definitely need to speak to a specialist. And I completely get how you're feeling. Like, being in constant pain is one of the most fatiguing things, whether it's back pain or people with chronic fatigue or chronic pain syndrome or, like chronic migraines. I don't know, whatever it is so unbelievably fatiguing, and it's really hard to like get up every day and get motivated and still do things and be in a good mood. Or even like, I went through a really long phase of just not wanting to be around anybody because I just knew I was always going to be in a shit mood. It's really hard, and I'm not the kind of person that's normally in a shit mood, but and I don't want to be, passing that shit mood on. But it's really like hard not to be in one when you've not slept and when you're in pain. And this goes for anyone who's struggling with, or anything really. But if you're like, oh, I'm perimenopausal and I'm not sleeping, the same kind of thing. It's like, and then you start shutting yourself off from your friends and your family because you're like, well, I don't want to be hanging around you guys in a bad mood. And then that makes things even worse. And then you can get quite depressed and blah, blah, blah. Things can really spiral. Not 100% sure now what my point was there, but I feel you. And go and see a back specialist. Okay, Samantha, it turns out I don't know how to do deadlifts properly. Chloe sent me videos, but I guess I'm not the only one. Can you please talk through deadlifts and the key things to look for? I can, but talking through them isn't particularly useful. I think videos are much more effective. Chloe and I are actually just about to spend a couple of days filming in a few months, which probably won't help you directly right now. I can send you some videos. I think one of the most common things is more of a timing thing. You really need to make sure that you're not bending your knees too soon or too late and that you're hinging from your hips to start the movement. But honestly, like there's, I know Samantha, we've kind of spoken about this before. Even getting 30 minutes in with a good PT who knows what they're doing in regards to deadlifts, like I could teach you in person in 20 minutes what would take me if you could even do it. I just don't think it's a good, like online coaching is amazing for some things. It is not good for teaching form. Like you just can't do it. You need to show people it, and you need to move your body in a way that you know how it should be moving. You need to do it in real life. I need to watch you. I need to see what the timing is. I need to see that you've got like the proprioception to know. You know, and there'll be people that I work with that I'm like, okay, well, I don't know. Don't bend your knees until you've hinged your hips, and they have no idea what that means, or they have no concept of like what their body is doing. Yeah, so unfortunately, I would say a podcast is probably not the best modality for that, but we can make some videos for you. And if you want to put up your own form video, then we can see if there's like specific parts that you need to work on. And I would say most people don't deadlift right. So you're certainly not alone. Right, okay, let me go to El Question Post. Oh gosh, how does Chloe find this? Oh, right, okay, found it. Okay, that wasn't so hard. Okay, Laura. Thinking ahead to when I've reached my goal weight, I'm nearly there. Remember, we don't have a goal weight. It's where you look and feel your best, but I'll continue. How do I keep this weight off forever, please? This is the third time I've lost weight and it's crept back on every other time when I stop tracking my calories. Okay. I mean, part of what you need to do is consistently doing what you're doing now with probably slightly different numbers. The main reason that people then put back on the weight is because they just slowly, slowly revert back to their original behaviors. Chloe and I call this like regression to the mean, right? If you think before you started the EC method, what your life looked like, what your behaviors looked like, that's your kind of norm. You will probably always try and gravitate kind of back towards that. And what you want to do is make sure that you don't do that. The first thing I'd say, and this isn't just to help our retention, this is because we want you to get results that actually last. We don't want this to be like the other three times that you've lost weight, is stay for maintenance. It is by far the hardest part. Most people lose weight. You've lost weight three times before. That's not hard. You've done it before. You can do it again. Maintaining it, that's hard. And that does mean figuring out how you're going to live your life without always feeling like you're on a diet, ideally without tracking calories. I mean, if you genuinely are like, I do not mind at all tracking calories and it has no negative impacts on me whatsoever, fine, continue to track. Most people don't want to do it for the rest of their life. Nor do you need to, but you probably do need to have some kind of routine. And you want to make sure that the habits that you're consistently doing are in line with the body composition that you want, right? And essentially that's how you do it. But we're here to coach you through that. And what we will be doing is bringing your calories up to maintenance. And then what you need to do is figure out, okay, well, what do maintenance calories look like in the context of my life? Because a lot of people might still, they don't stick to their quote unquote dieting calories during the week. Like, let's say that's 1600. And then over the weekend, they're like, yeah, and then I have 2 days at about 2000 calories. Okay, fine. If that works, obviously don't go to massive extremes of yo-yoing, but you're looking at on average over the week, is the amount of food that you're taking in terms of calories, roughly similar to the amount of food that you're to the amount of calories that you're expending? That's maintenance. Now, those figures always fluctuate a little bit, and that's fine. You don't need to have it down to the exact amount. And there will be times of year where maybe you put on a little bit, but the difference now isn't I put on a little bit and then I wait a couple of more weeks and then I wait a couple more months and then actually I've regained half the weight I lost and then I jump on another diet. It's okay, I put on a little bit, let's just tweak things and then I'll get back on on track. I just make little tweaks. It's not on and off a diet anymore. It's just I need to tighten things up a little bit. Okay, what do we have here? Emma, I hope you had a fab Easter weekend. I posted this on the thread, but I've made it live. Oh, this is so funny. I was just about to read yours out. Oh well. After your advice to add creatine monohydrate to my drink, I took the plunge and took a couple to try. You said 5 grams. The Warrior Blazing Berry conveniently came in a 5 gram scoop. Perfect. My protein, however, came in a 3 gram scoop. Not sure if I'm overthinking it. Because I should only add 3 grams of it, or should I aim for 5 grams? So 3 to 5 grams is fine. I wouldn't worry. I can't remember exactly how old you are, but there may be some benefits to older people taking slightly more creatine. So you might want to be like, hey, do you know what? I'll just take 2 scoops of my protein. That'll give you 6 grams. There's some research that shows that perimenopausal women will benefit from up to 0.1 grams per kilogram body weight. So if you weighed 60 kilograms, 5 grams, 6 grams. Is that right? Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's the maths I mean anyway, whether I said that right or not. If you weigh 60 kilograms, 6 grams. There is also no mention of how many calories it has in it. A MyFitnessPal barcode scan just said it wasn't recognized. This is all new to me. The warning about not exceeding recommended daily dose gave me a second guess. Some people dose way higher than that, and there's, you know, a lot of studies are done on loading phases as well, where they take 20 grams a day for a couple of days, or at least for a couple of potentially for a couple of weeks. So I wouldn't worry about overdosing on it. Especially not at 6 grams, and there are no calories in it, so I wouldn't worry about putting it into MyFitnessPal either. Hey, I need a bollocking. Was feeling rubbish before the weekend with PMS, and then also caught a virus from my son, feeling awful. And ended up deep in the fuck it bucket. I said I would start today again, but somehow don't seem to snap out of it. Still craving sugar, snacking on the leftover chocolate help. Right. Draw a line under it. Write yourself a plan that is realistic, that you're going to stick to. And I don't mean just like, oh yeah, I'm probably going to have this for dinner. Write it all down. What you need is 3 days of like tough, I am going to stick to this plan. I'm going to get up every morning and do a 10-minute morning routine. Then for breakfast, I'm going to have something high protein with at least 2 pieces of fruit. Then for lunch, I'm going to have, I don't know, soup or a salad. And then at dinner, this is what I'm going to have based around protein and veg. And these are when I'm going to get my workouts in. And actually, for the next 3 days, I'm going to make sure I do a workout every day. Trust me, all you need is 3 days to get that momentum back. But those 3 days, you need to be quite like strict with yourself of just, right, I'm getting to bed at this time. I'm doing my morning routine. I can't emphasize enough how beneficial a morning routine is. If you want the easiest way to just improve your day, it's how you spend that first 10 minutes. It makes the absolute world of difference. So if and it's an easy thing to do, right? It's literally it's 10 minutes. Just get up, do a small amount of exercise. Even if you're like going to get up, do 10 squats, 10 push-ups, 10 sit-ups. Drink a glass of water, write down my plan for the day, write one thing that I'm grateful for. Bam, there's your morning routine. Go, get on with your day. That will have such a big impact on your subsequent behaviors throughout the day. And it's the difference between chasing your tail all day and going into your day with intent and feeling a bit proud of yourself. You know, like you've done some, you can feel a little bit smug going into your day, being like, huh, already exercised, already hydrated. I'm grateful for whatever you're grateful for. I have a bit of a plan for the day. Even better if you're like, cool, and I've got in 20 grams of protein at breakfast. Like, you are winning. Set yourself up for success. Like, focus on that for the next 3 days. And then, as a bit of accountability, come back and tell me that you've done that and tag me. Okay, Lisa. Hi, Emma. I'm walking up Scarfell Pike in May and looking forward to the challenge. What would be the best training to do? Training to add to my 4 weekly workouts. I currently get 15,000 steps per day, but want to ensure I'm prepared. Also, could you advise me on nutrition on the day of the walk? Thanks. So, anything in regards to training, you need to think of the first principle of training, which is specificity. Blah, 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 specificity. Is it specific to the outcome, right? So realistically, if you're walking up a mountain, what would be the best training for it? Go and walk up another mountain, or go and walk up a hill, or do some incline walking. Think about what the outcome is, and then what training you need to do for it, right? If you want to, I don't know, get really good at running a marathon, the best training for that is to run more at the pace at which you're going to run the marathon. Same with, like, if you know, so I think someone had in the group the other day that they were doing this challenge that was at some farm or something, and they were going to be doing like tire flips and, I don't know, sled pushes and things like that. It's like, okay, well, what's the best training for that? Sled pushes and tire flips. Like, you want to resemble what you're about to do. Same with when people, I don't know, train for football. It's like the majority of footballers play football in training, right? Or they sprint with a ball, or they do, it's all thinking about, okay, what's the key aspects that make someone a good footballer? Okay, well, how do we train for that? It's agility, it's speed, it's stamina. Okay, how do we replicate that in training so that you're better on match day? Same kind of principles. In regards to nutrition on the day, let me just Google how long does it take to walk up Scarfell Pike. Oh, it looks very, very pretty. Oh, I think I've done this. How long to climb? 3 to 4 hours. Oh no, yeah, no, I have done this. I think this was the walk I did with my dad, and I was like, oh God, this is actually pretty extreme. I was like, wow. And then like five or six fell runners just like sprinted past me, and I was like, oh, okay, maybe it's not. But anyway, very beautiful. Honestly, a 3 to 4 hour hike, like, bring a couple of snacks, but this, you probably don't need to, I don't know, you certainly don't need to like carb load before it. Like, have a nice breakfast before you go, come down, have a nice meal with whoever you're having it with, and then move on with life the next day. Yeah. Okay, right. Let me get back to the question post. Not a question, but was laughing so much at the recording of Wednesday's live, my AirPod fell out and landed down the drain. Did not have hit. Do you know what? I often worry about this. Like, if I'm walking past a drain, I'm like, God, imagine if my AirPod blew out and actually landed. Right, okay. Could not have hit that target if I'd tried, but here we are. Ask some nearby ground workers how deep the drain might be and whether it was worth trying. And they jumped to my rescue, armpit deep in sludge in seconds, but no AirPod. Shout out to Southern Gas Network lads for their efforts. But anyone know if you can buy a single AirPod? Damn you, Clara. This is amazing. And apparently you can buy a single AirPod. My husband had to after he lost one on a plane. Huh. I'm always, no need to fess up then. I'm always bollocking the kids for losing stuff, being ungrateful, et cetera, et cetera. So ready for, not ready for the TED talk from my 15-year-olds. That's so funny. Do you know what else is so funny or interesting is Susan Roberts' husband is Craig Pickering, who, if people don't follow athletics, was a very good sprinter. And I only put those two together when I was chatting to her the other week, which is great. Okay, Tammy. On some of the home weighted workouts, we need to do 10 minutes cardio after the weights. Is it okay to do incline walks on the treadmill, or does it have to be more intense? Absolutely fine to do incline walks on the treadmill. Did you know another interesting fact about walking is that the, oh, now I can't remember exactly how it was worded. The biggest predictor of mortality, all-cause mortality in the elderly, is how fast they can walk. So if you're like, do you know what, I want to age well, keep on walking. Okay. Hi, ladies. I think I, oh, wait, I should probably be, I don't want to delete that one because it's absolutely hilarious. I think Chloe just deletes them after she's answered. Anyway. Hi, ladies. I think I would be able to commit to working out for shorter periods of time rather than one full workout 3 times a week. Finding time is the hardest with busy house and unsupportive partner. Oosh. I only just started to get my sleep back now when my younger is turning 5. So getting up really early sounds like torture after those years. I really need to recover. Absolutely fair enough. But getting up 20 to 30 minutes early every day is fine, and I love how it makes me feel for the rest of the day. How can I split the workouts, please? Will I still need a day off if I split and have them shorter? So I did this for a very long time, and your body does adapt to it. You might be like, I'll do one short workout one day, then a rest day, then a workout, then a rest day. But if you're already training 3 times a week and you're doing shorter workouts, like, it's probably fine to do one. I would still have a rest day. So I used to do 6 days a week, short, sharp workouts in the morning. Yeah. I was just thinking, you know what's hard is that, like, it would be very easy for me to just send you the short, sharp workouts. Apart from then everyone gets real confused with how many workouts are on the app. But maybe I could just send you them without putting them on the app. And if you want to input them onto the app, then you can input them onto the app. Or you could just cut a few sets out of the regular workouts that you're doing and just rotate them more frequently. So if you were doing push pull legs, then I would do push pull legs twice in a week. And I would reduce the sets that you're doing. See what you get done in 30 minutes. That's probably the best way to Okay. Paula, hello, lovelies. This is a question about the gym workouts. Sometimes I don't have quite enough time to get through the full workout, opening times and childcare. La la la. Yeah, exactly the same. Just do a few less sets. Ideally keep to all the exercises, but do less sets. Emma, your latest story, you answered a question on PCOS and low carb. You said, sorry for that cliffhanger. You said that those with PCOS have higher levels of insulin resistance, not always, but often, not always, just to caveat that, and a reduced ability to manage glucose levels. If they are not diabetic, why is this a problem? So, diabetes is just a cutoff of glucose dysregulation, right? So, you can have like normal healthy glucose levels, and then you can have pre-diabetic glucose levels where you're probably somewhat insulin resistant. And then when you become a bit more insulin resistant and you can no longer manage those glucose levels, then you are termed diabetic, right? Because you have these chronically elevated levels of glucose. If you have PCOS and you have some insulin resistance, that might not show as elevated glucose levels because you're able to produce more insulin to overcome the insulin resistance. It might mean that you're more predisposed to diabetes later on in life. But at the moment, so say you are insulin resistant, someone who is very insulin sensitive will be able to clear blood glucose with less insulin than someone who is insulin resistant. Again, I'm kind of using these terms as if they're on off. They're not. They're on a spectrum of like insulin, very insulin sensitive at one end and then very insulin resistant at the other. And the further along you are on that scale, the more insulin you will need to clear a given amount of blood glucose. So I guess that in the answer, like, why is that important? Is if you end up not being able to clear blood glucose, then that would become a problem. But it's the same sort of principles. Like, you know, you want to stay a healthy weight, you want to exercise as much as possible. I think the main distinguishing difference from my view with PCOS is that you can be lean, you can be healthy, you can be doing all of the right things and still have a harder job clearing blood glucose because you have PCOS. That's kind of like the main difference. And that's where I do think that potentially a lower carb diet could be useful. Because with some people, like if you're very overweight and the reason that you are insulin resistant is because you're very overweight, then cutting out carbs is almost like avoiding the problem. It's like, oh yeah, your glucose levels will go down, but that's because your body is not being challenged by glucose, right? But if you did eat carbs, like you'd still have the same problem with clearing blood glucose. And that just means that you can't eat carbs. Whereas actually, if you just lost the weight and you became more sensitive to insulin, then you would be able to manage carbohydrates. And yeah, you wouldn't have that problem. Whereas with PCOS, it's not just about weight, or more to the point, excess body fat. Okay, I am gonna wrap up there. I hope, oh wait, there's a couple of questions here. Hi, Emma. I'm doing the Great North Run in September and would really love to improve my time on previous years. I've got a Garmin that's telling me to run on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Are there any specific gym weight workouts that you would advise to improve my running time, or should I stick to just running? 100% do the push-pull leg sessions. Absolutely, do them in the gym. That will help your running performance. It will also help your likelihood of, well, reduce your likelihood of getting injured, help you recover. Yeah, absolutely. That's why all runners, all elite runners, like Paul Radcliffe lifts weights. I mean, I should probably know more recent marathon runners, but I mean, like all elite runners will do gym work. It will 100% benefit you. So definitely do that. And even if you just think, right, okay, if I had stronger legs, would then pushing my own body weight during running be easier comparatively than if I had weaker legs? Yes, 100%. Even if you're thinking of it in that terms. Sue, hi, on the grad's gym leg workouts, what would be an alternative to lying hamstring curls? My gym doesn't have the machine. If your gym has a Swiss ball, do hamstring curls on the Swiss ball. They are real good. Yeah, that would be my top suggestion. Okay, we will be back later in the week. I think we said we were coming back with my Google Diary. I think on Friday at 2. Hopefully Bodhi's fine. We will keep you updated. And hopefully I will be back with Chloe. All right. Bye everyone.